The following panel is called Thinking Critically About the Canadian Immigration System and was held at the University of Guelph on October 30, 2008. This panel was organized by Fuerza Puerza, formerly Student Support for Migrant Workers, University of Guelph Central Student Association, and OPERG. Who's let in, who's left out, and why? National mythology portrays Canada as a diverse and welcoming country, and yet immigration policy, migrant workforces, and deportation orders tell a very different story. Are our borders really open to anyone seeking a better life, or just to those who look like they'll fit in and who serve Canadian economic interests? Does the Canadian government really care about how immigrants live, or just how they work? Join Faria Kamal from No One Is Illegal Toronto and Janet McLaughlin, instructor of sociology and anthropology at the University of Guelph, for a no-holds-barred look at the history, the politics, and the classism and racism of the Canadian immigration system.
And I'm really honored to introduce our guests tonight. This event sort of came together when a very keen individual was like, yo, guys, we got to do something. We got to, like, organize an event. I've been thinking about this. So OPERG came together with the Central Student Association and with Students in Support for Migrant Workers. And we decided that we would organize this event as kind of a general overview and to start an ongoing dialogue on campus around these important issues. Here on this campus, even, there are international students. And because of their status as international students, are forced to pay anywhere between 200% and 300% more in tuition than the rest of the people. So there's some pretty basic discrimination that we are surrounded with on a daily basis. And at the end of this, I'm gonna kind of point you guys to one of the campaigns that the CSA is working on to bring international students under OHIP. Right now they're faced to pay other premiums for health care coverage, and is just another example of the very localized discrimination based on people's status that we see here at the university. Anyways, the speakers who are here tonight are fabulous people. We have amazing speakers. I'm sure you guys saw it on the poster, but we have Faria Chidmari from No One Is Illegal Toronto, Janet McLaughlin, who is a professor here at the University of Guelph. So please join me in inviting them up with a round of applause. Just to further elaborate on their introductions, I guess we're going to have Janet McLaughlin speak first. Sorry, you can have a seat. And I'll just give you a brief introduction from my scribbled down notes. Janet McLaughlin is a medical anthropologist. She is currently teaching sociology and anthropology as well as international development at the University of Guelph. She's conducted extensive research with migrant farm workers in Canada, Mexico, and Jamaica, focusing on their health and human rights. And throughout this work, she's been involved with a number of volunteer initiatives in solidarity with migrant workers, including a recent pilot project to provide specialized medical care to migrant workers. So she's going to be our first panelist, and we'll be sticking around to answer questions at the end. So thanks to everyone for coming out.
Thank you. My most prized, actually, association with my bio that wasn't mentioned is that I'm a graduate of the University of Guelph as an undergrad, and it's wonderful to be back to speak with you about these important issues. So thanks to the CSA and OPERG and the Student Support for Migrant Workers for hosting this event. Can you hear okay? Yes, okay. So I've basically been asked to provide a basic overview, a very brief sped up overview of Canada's immigration system, and specifically in its relation to temporary foreign worker programs and race. So basically, you know, Canada has a reputation of being a very humanitarian, multicultural society, and many Canadians pride themselves with this reputation. But really, this masks the reality that Canada's immigration system is actually quite discriminatory and racist, and it has been from the very beginning. Canada and immigration is not colorblind. It has always been influenced by political economic concerns far more than humanitarian issues. And I want to take you back to 1947, to a very famous speech at the time given by the Prime Minister, William Lyon Mackenzie King. And he made the speech in Parliament the year that the Canadian Citizenship Act came into effect. And he was outlining his vision for immigration. And this is what he said. "With regard to the selection of immigrants, much has been said about discrimination. I wish to make it quite clear that Canada is perfectly within her rights in selecting the persons whom we regard as desirable future citizens. It is not a fundamental human right of any alien to enter Canada. It is a privilege." Then there will, I am sure, be general agreement with the view that people of Canada do not wish, as a result of mass immigration, to make a fundamental alteration in the character of our population. Large-scale immigration from the Orient would change the fundamental composition of the Canadian population. Any considerable Oriental immigration would, moreover, be certain to give rise to social and economic problems of a character that might lead to serious difficulties in the field of international relations. So this is a fundamental speech given at this key moment in Canadian history that set the tone in an overt way about Canada's racialized immigration system. This talk about fundamentally altering the character of the population is basically a veiled way of saying that the essence of Canadian population should be white European descendants. Canada's initial nation-building objective was that of a creation of a British settler community. White immigrants were preferred, and people of color were barred or severely limited from being able to immigrate. As recently as 1967, when my father met and wanted to marry my mother, who is a Jamaican, and said this to the immigration officials at the border, and the immigration officials said, "Look, you can do the honorable thing if you like, but there's no way you're bringing her into Canada." And so that was my father's first introduction to the racism behind the immigration system. Eventually, of course, my mother did come to Canada because she was marrying my father, but it was very difficult for many other people of color from the global south to be able to immigrate for various reasons. But there has always been one problem. White free immigrants don't like doing dangerous, difficult, low-paid work. So Canada had to devise ways within the immigration system to get people into the country to do this crappy work without allowing them to immigrate and to change this character of the nation. And this is where the category of migrant worker comes in. Now, I want, when we think about borders, I want us to think a little bit more conceptually, rather than thinking about borders just as a line dividing countries, to also think about borders that are something that can exist to divide people within a country. In this sense, Sharma argues that borders signify a line of difference that allows state authorities to carry out practices against non-nationals that are deemed unacceptable, even manifestly unjust and undemocratic, if they were to be carried out against citizens. What this essentially means is that people can come into Canada and live and work here, but because they're not citizens, they are being treated fundamentally differently in ways that would be deemed fundamentally inappropriate for Canadian citizens to be treated. And they can be treated this way because they are labeled foreigner, because they are labeled other, because they lack citizenship status. In this way, borders are really extended to exist both between nations as well as within nations. And there's really no way to see this better than through looking at undocumented peoples and looking at the case of temporary foreign workers. And that's what I'm going to focus on right now. So in the case of temporary foreign workers, the Canadian state, has basically created these racially segregated zones within which people can come and work, but through which they can never become citizens. They can never benefit from the right to citizenship. So I'm going to go over a little bit about the history of this and how it came to be that we have so many temporary workers in Canada who are unable to become citizens. Well, basically, Canada's had guest workers, as they call them, since Confederation. Workers of color were brought in to perform tasks in agriculture, industrial and domestic work, and infrastructure construction, but never or rarely as immigrants. The foreigner, in this sense, was a racialized label of non-whiteness that connotated ready but highly controlled mobility, while whiteness implied a settler's capabilities. And this is coming out of research by Trumper and Wong. So Chinese labor for Canada's railways and domestic work started in the 19th century and early 20th century. And these workers were meant to come without their families, do the hard labor, and return after their work was no longer needed. You may have heard recently in the news there was an apology issued for the Chinese Exclusion Act and the Chinese head tax. And this was, you know, decades and decades after. But basically, for a time period, Canada totally restricted Chinese to be able to immigrate. They could only come to work in Canada. So from 1947, when the category of Canadian citizenship was first created, Canada started instituting contract labor programs for specific industries in which they couldn't get enough Canadians to do the work. Industries like mining, logging, lumbering, and specialized industries within agriculture. Initially, these people were admitted under the category of visitor, but then eventually these temporary foreign workers were regulated under a program called the Non-Immigrant Employment Authorization Program. This happened in 1973, and later this program morphed into what is now called the Temporary Foreign Worker Program in the 1990s. I'm going to go over now a little bit about how Canadian immigration and race has interacted with these temporary foreign worker programs. Prior to 1962, Canada had an overtly discriminatory policy, basically barring non-whites from entering Canada on any major scale, as I mentioned before. In 1962, there was a shift in policy towards a de-racialized immigration system, whereby immigrants were selected on the basis of their skills and experience that could contribute to the Canadian economy and the labor market. By 1967, we have what is now called the emergence of the universal point system. And the discourse of Canada changed from a white settler community to one of multiculturalism. The point system was used to attract people with skills in English and French, high levels of education and training. Although it did not overtly differentiate by race, it actually excluded the vast majority of people living in the global south who didn't speak English or French and who were not well educated. It basically made it impossible for these people to immigrate to Canada through the point system. However, workers in low-skilled industries were still very much needed for the Canadian economy, but they didn't conform to this point system. So in order to accommodate for this, as I mentioned, Canada made these temporary foreign worker programs. And this allowed in these people from mainly regions of the global south, Asia, Africa, Latin America, to come in to work temporarily, after which they had to return home. So in today's immigration system, there are various classes of immigrants. We have the economic and family class. These people normally have to apply outside of Canada and wait quite a long time to be able to come into the country. This point system is extremely difficult, and I encourage you to go onto the Citizenship and Immigration Canada website, because there you can do a little test to see if you would qualify as a Canadian citizen. I just performed this test, and I do not qualify. I do not have enough points to get into Canada if I was outside of Canada right now. And in fact, a lot of Canadians who are living in Canada do not have enough points to be able to become Canadian citizens. So, really, it's very, very difficult to get into Canada through this point system. The other kinds of ways people can immigrate are through the refugee system, the humanitarian and compassionate system, and that's a whole other ball of, it's a whole other ballpark with a number of problems as well. And then there are temporary foreign workers and foreign students. So there are very limited ways for people to be able to get into the country. Yet, our country still has these economic and labor needs that go beyond this immigration system. So for that, we have temporary foreign worker programs and also precarious undocumented workers, which I think you're going to address. So I will focus on the temporary foreign workers. The integration of the temporary foreign workers has risen dramatically over the last decade. In 2006, there were 172,000 of these workers, which represents a 122% increase over the past 10 years. So it's really, although it's existed for decades, it's really expanding rapidly right now. There are now about 200,000 temporary foreign workers, and these are workers who are legally in Canada on temporary foreign worker permits. They come to occupations that are labeled occupations under pressure, which supposedly can't get enough Canadian workers to work at the wages and under the conditions that are offered by Canadian employers. They're only authorized to work in Canada for a specific period of time, after which they must return home. Many, however, do end up staying beyond their contracts for various reasons. Perhaps they got sick while in Canada and they're afraid to go home. Perhaps they have family ties or bonds that want, and for that reason want to stay in Canada. Or perhaps they need more money. Many of them go into a huge amount of debt to come into Canada. And so many workers end up, even though they come here legally, end up being quote-unquote illegal after they're here in Canada. So the issues of temporary foreign workers, of undocumented workers, they all relate. They're all related under this broken immigration system. And that they're very much interconnected. They're not separate issues. So low-skill temporary foreign workers, it's important to note, are normally unfree labor. And what I mean by that is that they are coming in to work with a specific employer, and they're unable to change jobs if they're unhappy with those conditions. So this makes them extremely vulnerable because it basically is indenturing them and binding them to one specific employer regardless of how they're treated. And if they don't like it, their option is to go home rather than you or I or Canadian citizens who have the option to change jobs. This makes them extremely vulnerable to abuse. Today, there are nearly double unfree temporary foreign workers entering Canada as there are free immigrant workers. So in a sense, these unfree temporary workers are replacing free immigrant workers. There is also an increased feminization of these workers, with increased numbers of women coming in. And these programs are very much racialized and gendered, with specific races, nationalities, and gender being targeted for specific industries. Migrants often pay huge fees to labor recruiters in their home country, from $5,000 to $15,000 or more, just to get just to be able to come into the country. So when they arrive here, they often have huge debts. They sometimes have mortgaged their homes, put their family's livelihood on the line, and sometimes they arrive here under false pretenses. They think they're going to be placed in one job, they end up being placed in another job for wages and conditions which they didn't agree to. Yet they are very vulnerable because they are in debt and they need to keep working in order to pay off their debt. Sometimes these recruiters have arranged for false SIN numbers and false positions, and workers who think they're coming here legally end up working illegally. So it's a really complicated problem. Workers are also often ineligible for regular EI benefits because their permit only allows them to work with one employer. So if they are fired or need to change work, they're unable to collect these regular benefits. So it is true that some temporary foreign workers can now apply for permanent residency, but these are those workers in high-skilled areas, such as managerial or professional positions. It still excludes low-skilled, so-called low-skilled workers, such as agricultural workers. So really, it's important to emphasize that these are employer labor-driven programs. They are not immigration programs. I'm going to now go through briefly the two major guest worker programs that have existed over decades in specific industries. First, there's the Live-In Caregiver Program, and secondly, the Seasonal Agricultural Workers Program. So with respect to the first, the Live-In Caregiver Program, this initiated in the late 19th centuries, bringing in Caribbean domestic workers into Canada. And later in 1973, it was formalized into a specific program that is now called the Live-In Caregiver Program. Although these women, these are primarily women from the Philippines who are now coming, and although they can apply for permanent residency after a couple of years working here, and many of them are unable to achieve this. The mandatory live-in requirement of the program makes them extremely vulnerable to abuse. They're isolated, and they have to live in their employer's homes. They're afraid to complain, and it's very difficult for them to change jobs. So this puts them in a very vulnerable position. And also, they must endure long, painful separations from families. These women are normally mothers with children back home, and it's very difficult for the family to be separated. With respect to the Seasonal Agricultural Workers Program, this is a program that began in 1966 when Canadian farmers were having a hard time getting labor. This is due to a number of reasons: the increased urbanization and rural to urban migration, and the decrease in family farm size are some of the reasons why farmers were having a hard time finding labor. So there were various government initiatives to try and get labor onto farms, involving programs for war veterans, displaced people, overseas children, women, unemployed, Aboriginal immigrants, foreign students, and welfare recipients. So all of these programs are trying to put people into the agriculture industry, but ultimately they all failed. These programs often involved unequal working conditions where new immigrants of certain categories were deemed eligible to be basically on free labor, to work for a certain time in agriculture and then to leave. And this was very much depending on race, again, based on racial suitability for conditions of unfreedom. Now, as soon as people had the choice to leave farms, as soon as they were no longer unfree, as soon as they were citizens, they left because their work was difficult and it was low paid and it was dangerous and time consuming. So again, the farmers were left without a labor force. At this point, they looked to the U.S., who had several labor programs, the Bracero program, the British West Indies Temporary Alien Labor Program, and later the H-2 Visa Program, which were enabling United States farmers to import labor from the Caribbean and from Mexico. So Canada said, the Canadian farmers said, look, we need a similar program here in order to be able to compete. Now, originally, Canadian officials didn't want to allow in workers from the Caribbean because they were too afraid that these workers would stay. And there were very blatant racist reasons for denying the right of these workers to enter Canada in the beginning. First of all, they were worried about these workers marrying or mating with white Canadian women. They were worried about race riots. They were worried about tensions, racial tensions, and they were worried about the inability of these people of color being unable to adjust to the cold climate. So based on these very racist reasons, originally the Canadian government, this is all documented in the archives, you can go and read these rationales, they denied the workers the ability to enter. And then when they finally acknowledged we need this program, they said, fine, but we will not let these workers immigrate. They can only come on temporary labor permits. And this was very important. And I'll just read you a quote from the minister, the deputy minister of citizenship and immigration at the time, who stated, "We do not want these people to remain in Canada. We do not want to get involved in the difficulty or embarrassment forcing them out. It must be gotten across to the workers that we are willing to try this once on a small scale, but if we have any difficulty at all, it will not be repeated. The minute we find that these transient workers are causing us difficulty by refusing to leave, we are through." So clearly, the government was very concerned that these workers could not settle in Canada. With this caveat, they devised a program which would ensure that workers could come seasonally and return home, never to stay in Canada. And this program exists to this day. Workers come to Canada for a maximum of 8 months a year. They pay taxes, pension plan, employment insurance. Again, they're tied to one employer, which makes them very vulnerable. They're afraid to complain because their employer's evaluation determines whether they return to Canada, and they need this money because they are facing increasing economic pressures under globalization. And I'm sure you've all studied that here, so I don't need to get into it, but it's very hard to make a living wage in these countries. So they do have government representatives in Canada who are supposed to defend their rights. These are called liaison officers or government officials, and Alan knows all too well about these officials. But the problem is that these liaison officers are in a conflict of interest because it's to their benefit that these workers are coming into Canada. And that is because migrants' remittances are an essential source of foreign exchange for these countries. A World Bank report in 2006 said that migrants officially sent home more than $167 billion U.S. dollars to families in developing countries. This is a figure nearly twice that of international aid, making remittances the largest source of external capital in many developing countries. So with this in mind, it's very hard for these government officials to represent their workers and stand up for them when they need this remittance money. So despite the vast reliance on migrant workers and the importance of them for the Canadian economy, the Canadian government has refused to implement policies to protect migrant workers' rights. There are two key ILO conventions on the rights and standards of migrant workers, and there is one a convention from the United Nations. Canada has not ratified any of these agreements. So despite their vast use of these migrant workers, Canada refuses to ensure their protections through international law. When something goes wrong, when workers get sick, and that's very common because these industries are dangerous, they're precarious, workers are sent home. They're considered disposable. This places sick and injured workers in a very difficult position because often they're being sent home to countries where they do not have adequate health insurance. And so workers like Alan, who is going to tell you his story in a few minutes, Alan came to work in Canada as part of this program. He came down with kidney failure, and when the government tried to pressure him to go home, he said, no, because in Jamaica, I won't be able to get dialysis. I won't be able to survive. And so there are several workers in a situation like Alan's, and we're really lucky to have him here today to share his story with us. And I wanna end my talk sharing with you another story of another migrant worker. This migrant worker also came to Canada from Mexico, and he was working one day, and he had an accident where pesticides were spilled on him. He became very ill and was sent back to Mexico, and shortly thereafter he died, unable to access the medical treatment that he needed to survive. His widow and child has received no pension, no support, and they're barely making ends meet. And so what happened when this worker got sent home was total abandonment from the system. And so I just wanted to highlight something I have here today. Two things. One, these are bags that are made by the widow of this worker, Alicia. And you can see it's a tomato with a fist in it, and that stands for justice for farm workers. And she's making these bags as a way to try and support her family in the absence of any government support system. The other thing I want to show you is this DVD, which highlights the experiences of Mexican migrant workers when they go home sick and injured. And it features this story that I just mentioned. And these bags and CDs are available for donations at the back table there. And all of the money will go back to the community and the widow. So when we think about Canada as a nation and immigration, it's just really important to remember these stories. And I really welcome you all here to learn about these issues, and any questions after will be very welcome. Thank you.